a great weekend. We'll see you again on Monday morning.
This is VOA News. I'm Michael Brown. The Biden administration is rejecting Moscow's claims that Washington provoked this week's confrontation that led to the downing of a U.S. drone in the Black Sea. AP Washington correspondent Sagar Magani reports.
The military's released a 42-second video of what it says is a Russian jet dumping fuel on the drone and then clipping the MQ-9's propeller.
Just decimates the Russian lie about what they said happened or what they said didn't happen.
National Security Council spokesman John Kirby notes the Russians say their jets did not hit the drone, claiming it went down on its own after a sharp maneuver. Moscow says the U.S. caused the incident by flying in restricted airspace.
They can announce whatever they want. They can say whatever they want.
Kirby says the drone was in international airspace over international waters. Russia's claims of restricted airspace are just that.
We aren't observing them. They're not legal.
Sagar Magani, Washington.
North Korea says its Thursday intercontinental ballistic missile launch was in response to ramped up U.S.-South Korea military exercises that began this week. The U.S. and South Korea are in the middle of an 11-day major joint military exercise. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken was in the African nation of Niger Thursday to offer humanitarian and economic and security aid. At a news conference with his Niger counterpart, Blinken outlined the purpose of the $150 million humanitarian aid package.
Emergency food, safe drinking water, sanitation, hygiene services, and will also support vulnerable refugees and asylum seekers evacuated to Niger.
Blinken's visit to Niger follows a stop earlier in the day in Ethiopia, a trip viewed by analysts as an effort to bolster U.S. relations in a part of the world where Russia and China have been seeking to gain influence. This is VOA News. The U.S. Federal Reserve is lending hundreds of billions of dollars in emergency funds to troubled banks. We get more on the story from the AP's Lisa Dwyer.
The Federal Reserve says that cash-short banks have borrowed about $300 billion in emergency funding from the central bank in the past week. Nearly half the money, $143 billion, went to holding companies for the two major banks that failed recently, Silicon Valley Bank and Signature Bank. The money they borrowed was used to pay their uninsured depositors with bonds owned by both banks posted as collateral. An additional $148 billion in lending was provided to other unidentified banks through a long-standing program called the Discount Window and amounted to a record level for that program. Banks can borrow from the Discount Window for up to 90 days. Typically, in a given week, only about $4 to $5 billion is borrowed through that program. I'm Lisa Dwyer.
Mexican authorities say some of the six women reported missing early this month have been found dead. We get more from the AP correspondent Norman Hall.
A prosecutor says there is evidence that some of the six women who went missing on March 7th have been found dead. Carlos Zamarripa, head prosecutor of the violence-plagued Guanajuato state, said signs have been found that some of them were killed. The women, who may have been traveling together, disappeared on the outskirts of the city of Celaya. Authorities posted search bulletins for the six women on March 9th. For years, the industrial and farming hub of Guanajuato has been Mexico's most violent state, with the Jalisco cartel waging a turf war against local gangs. I'm Norman Hall.
Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin has ordered a number of improvements in access to mental health care to try to reduce suicides in the U.S. military, but he is holding off on endorsing more controversial recommendations to restrict gun and ammunition purchase by young troops, sending them to another panel for study. The orders issued Thursday reflect increasing concerns about suicides in the military, despite more than a decade of programs and other efforts to prevent them, and spur greater intervention by commanders, friends, and family members. Leaders of unions representing hundreds of thousands of nurses, ambulance crews, and other healthcare workers in England reached a deal Thursday to resolve months of disruptive strikes for higher wages. The deal, negotiated by the government officials and union leaders, would give workers a lump sum payment for the current year and a 5% raise next year. Any strike actions will be halted while rank-and-file members vote on whether to accept it. The agreement doesn't resolve a similar pay dispute involving early career doctors who have picketed this week. For more news, please join us at our website, voanews.com, or the VOA mobile app. I'm Michael Brown, VOA News.
Today is Friday, March 17th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I am Chinua Ofor in Washington. Coming up in the next half hour, the UN releases an independent report accusing Russia of war crimes in Ukraine.
The Commission has concluded that the Russian authorities have committed numerous violations of international humanitarian law, in addition to a wide range of war crimes.
Poland becomes the first NATO member to send fighter jets to Ukraine.
Andrzej Duda says Poland would hand over four of the Soviet-made warplanes in the coming days, and the rest need to be checked and will be supplied later.
And the UN extends its mission in Afghanistan and calls on the Taliban to respect women's rights. We'll have these stories and more next on International Edition. Stay tuned. A UN-mandated investigative body said at a news conference on Thursday that Russia has committed wide-ranging war crimes in Ukraine, such as willful killings, torture, and the deportation of children. The Independent International Commission of Inquiry on Ukraine based its reports on more than 500 interviews, as well as national satellite images and visits to detention sites and graves. This as the International Criminal Court in The Hague is expected to seek the arrest of Russian officials for forcibly deporting children from Ukraine and targeting civilian infrastructure. Russia denies committing atrocities or targeting civilians in Ukraine. Eric Moss is head of the commission.
The commission has concluded that the Russian authorities have committed numerous violations of international humanitarian law and international human rights law, in addition to a wide range of war crimes, including the war crime of excessive incidental death, injury or damage, willful killings, torture, inhuman treatment, unlawful confinement, rape, as well as unlawful transfer and deportation. The Commission has also found that the waves of attack from 10 October 2022 on Ukraine's energy-related infrastructure by the Russian armed forces and the use of torture by Russian authorities may amount to crimes against humanity. The Commission recommends further investigations. That Russian armed forces have committed indiscriminate and disproportionate attacks, which are violations of international humanitarian law. Such attacks have impacted objects which are purely civilian in nature, such as residential buildings, hospitals, shops, and places with large concentrations of civilians.
That's head of the UN Independent International Commission of Inquiry on Ukraine, Eric Morse. Poland's president says his country plans to give Ukraine a dozen MiG-29 fighter jets, becoming the first NATO member country to fulfill the Ukrainian government's increasingly an urgent request for warplanes. Associated Press correspondent Charles de la Desma reports.
Andrzej Duda says Poland would hand over four of the Soviet-made warplanes in the coming days, and the rest need to be checked and will be supplied later. Duda did not say if other countries would be making the same move, although Slovakia has said it would send its disused MiGs to Ukraine. While Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky has pleaded for Western nations to share fighter jets, NATO allies have expressed hesitancy. Duda adds Poland's Air Force would replace the planes it gives to Ukraine with South Korea-made FA-50 fighters and American-made F-35 warplanes. I'm Charles de la Desma.
The United Nations Security Council voted to extend the U.S. mission in Afghanistan for 1 year on Thursday. With a unanimous vote, the resolution to extend the mission was adopted alongside a call to conduct an independent assessment on international approach in Afghanistan. The two resolutions were penned by Japan and the United Arab Emirates, whose representatives emphasized the need to protect the rights of women and girls in Afghanistan. The Taliban have said they respect women's rights in accordance with their interpretation of Islamic law and Afghan culture, and that authorities have set up committees to examine perceived issues in order to work towards reopening girls' schools. Robert Wood is the U.S. representative to the Council.
The Council's action today is timely, particularly amid Women's History Month, and as we convene the 67th session of the Commission on the Status of Women. The Council's action directly supports the empowerment of women and girls, their human rights and fundamental freedoms, and their full, equal, and meaningful participation in all levels and stages of decision-making.
That's U.S. Representative to the U.N. Security Council, Robert Wood. South Korea and Japan agreed to ease tensions Thursday during a rare meeting between the two countries' top leaders. The meeting in Tokyo came hours after North Korea fired a long-range missile, highlighting a security challenge faced by each country. More from VOA's Bill Gallo in Seoul.
A new chapter for South Korea and Japan. That's the message as South Korean President Yoon Suk-yeol met Japanese Prime Minister Fumio Kishida on Thursday. The two sides agreed to ease trade tensions, restore diplomatic visits, and normalize an intelligence sharing deal. Kishida compared the moment to a springtime thaw.
This week, Japan saw the blossoming of cherry blossoms. After a long winter season, in terms of the bilateral relations, for the first time in 12 years, Japan has been able to welcome the president of South Korea.
Japan-South Korea ties have suffered over a dispute related to Japan's use of forced labor during its World War II-era occupation of Korea. But last week, Yoon unveiled a plan to compensate South Korean forced labor victims. Yoon's plan calls for South Korean, not Japanese, companies to offer the compensation. Polls suggest about 60% of South Koreans oppose the plan, creating questions about whether it will last, says analyst Robert Kelly.
These kinds of deals really depend on, will South Korean progressives, the South Korean left, accept these things or not? Do they see Japan as sufficiently contrite for what happened in the past to actually accept these deals? The South Korean left's response to the deal so far has been pretty vitriolic.
But shared interests may also play a big role. Ahead of Yoon's visit, North Korea launched another long-range missile. The ICBM landed outside Japan's exclusive economic zone. But in Seoul and Tokyo, the launch was the latest reminder of the need to work together on common threats. Bill Gallo, VOA News, Seoul, South Korea.
Thank you, Bill. And after Europe's driest summer in 500 years, swaths of the region and North Africa are grappling with a severe winter drought that's affecting agriculture, energy, and the environment. Some countries, including France, already are calling for water restrictions ahead of another potentially searing summer. From Paris, Lisa Bryant has more for VOA.
After a record 32 days without rain, finally, some precipitation. High winds and storms have lashed a chunk of France, but it might be a short-term reprieve.
On voit qu'on est partout en retard.
France's Minister for Ecological Transition, Christophe Béchu, warns the country can't count on its severely depleted groundwater tables next summer. He's called for vigilance in water consumption. Some local authorities are now rolling out water restrictions, which may expand to more places if dry weather persists. They could especially affect major water-consuming sectors like agriculture and nuclear power. France is not the only country gripped by drought. So are parts of Italy, Spain, Germany, and Britain, along with Turkey and North Africa.
At the moment, we have concerns due to the lack of precipitation that has been accumulating in the last month, but also due to the warmer than usual temperature in some parts of Europe and the Mediterranean region.
Andrea Toretti heads a drought team for the European Commission's Copernicus European and Global Drought Observatory. He says Europe must adopt mitigation and adaptation measures to cope with a changing climate that's becoming the new normal.
The point is that we need to look not just at tomorrow, but what will happen in the coming years.
For example, he says changing crop varieties to those favoring less water and shorter growing seasons. That's something Paris area grain farmer Jérôme Regnault is already considering.
Donc les pluies qui viennent d'arriver là sont une très bonne nouvelle.
Regnault says the latest rains are good news, but they can't make up for weeks of drought. He and other farmers have waited before planting and fertilizing, especially since fertilizer has become expensive with the war in Ukraine. French farmers and environmentalists have clashed over the idea of building enormous water basins for agricultural use. Regnault, who doesn't irrigate, is against massive basins, but supports using natural runoff. Today's tensions suggest France and other European countries may face more water wars to come. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
And the World Health Organization warns that spread of disruption of health services during COVID-19 pandemic has led rich countries to increase their recruitment of health professionals from poor countries. As a result, some African nations are losing skilled workers. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The world was suffering from a shortage of healthcare workers before the pandemic struck. 3 years of COVID-19 has worsened an already bad situation. The World Health Organization reports more than 115,000 healthcare workers died from the coronavirus. One in three suffer from anxiety and depression, and about 40% have left the profession because of burnout. This has set up a global competition among countries to recruit nurses and doctors to fill their dwindling ranks. WHO warns the accelerated recruitment of health professionals from poor countries could hurt health systems in their home countries. Jim Campbell is WHO Director of the Health Workforce Department. Of the 55 countries identified as most vulnerable to recruitment, he says 37 are in the WHO African region.
For these 37 countries, the impact of that is potentially going to have a negative impact on the population access to a qualified professional health worker, and therefore that there should be no active recruitment from those countries.
He says it is easy for anyone who has a professional license within the African continent to migrate and seek work anywhere inside or outside the region. He says poor working conditions and low pay contribute to the growing brain drain of health workers from the continent.
The Gulf states have traditionally been reliant on international personnel. And then some of the OECD high-income countries have really accelerated their recruitment and employment to respond to the pandemic and respond to the loss of lives, the infections, the absences of workers during the pandemic.
Campbell says WHO does not work to prevent migration among healthcare workers. He notes migration has benefits when it is managed appropriately and when the benefits are accrued by the individuals and systems of both the source and destination countries. WHO has drawn up a list of safeguards to ensure the international movement of health workers is ethically managed, and measures are taken to ensure an adequate supply of health workers remain in the sending countries. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
In other news, U.S. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen is telling Congress and the nation that the U.S. banking system remains sound. Yellen is the first Biden administration official to face lawmakers over the decision to protect uninsured money at two failed regional banks in California and New York, which some are calling, quote, bailout, unquote. Yellen testified before the Senate Finance Committee on Thursday, a week after the second largest bank collapse in U.S. history. Yellen said the government took, quote, forceful actions to strengthen public confidence, unquote, in the banking system. Yellen says she can reassure committee members the system is steady and Americans, quote, can feel confident, unquote, their deposits will be there when they need them. This is VOA's International Edition. I am Chinua Dufo in Washington. U.S. Secretary of State Anthony Blinken says implementation of the November peace deal in Ethiopia is showing significant progress. The top U.S. diplomat also announced an additional support of $331 million for drought-affected people in the country. Maya Misakira reports from Addis Ababa, Ethiopia.
U.S. Secretary of State Anthony Blinken says there has been significant progress in the implementation of the peace deal in Ethiopia. The Secretary of State spoke about the commitment to the peace process by both sides during a press conference Wednesday at Addis Ababa University, concluding his first day in Ethiopia.
By and large, the guns are silent. Humanitarian assistance is flowing. Services are being restored. We've seen the TPLF disarm its heavy weapons. And we are seeing external forces moving out of Tigray to include the Eritreans. It's not complete. It's a process, but we continue to see significant movement in the right direction to fulfilling the commitments that were made in the agreement.
The peace deal was signed between the Ethiopian federal government and Tigrayan forces last November after 2 years of conflict. Blinken said that there was a very significant drop in human rights abuses in Tigray, according to the human rights advocates he met with earlier. Blinken also made an announcement for $331 million in humanitarian support in Ethiopia.
Today, I announced an additional $331 million in emergency food and humanitarian assistance that will reach billions of people, millions of Ethiopians affected by conflict, affected by drought.
The U.S. is Ethiopia's biggest single country provider of humanitarian assistance, with over $3 billion worth of humanitarian assistance provided over the last 2 years of conflict. Blinken's visit to Ethiopia included talks with the Ethiopian Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed on implementation of the peace deal. The two also discussed issues of accountability for atrocities perpetrated by all parties during the conflict and the need for transitional justice, according to a statement by spokesperson for the U.S. Department of State, Ned Price. Blinken was expected to meet with African Union chairperson Moussa Faki Mohamed Thursday before heading to Niger. Maya Misikar for VOA News, Addis Ababa, Ethiopia.
Mozambique President Filipe Nyusi says the death toll in the country from Cyclone Freddy has jumped to 53, with nearly 50,000 people displaced by the record-breaking storm, which killed at least 225 people in neighboring Malawi. Charles Maguiro reports from Maputo, Mozambique.
In a state TV address Wednesday night, President Filipe Nyusi said the cyclone-related death in Mozambique were caused by drownings, electrocutions, fires, falling walls and trees, and lightning. Nyusi said the city of Kilimani was the worst affected by Cyclone Freddy, with 50,000 people displaced from destroyed and damaged homes to more than 130 centers with temporary shelters. He said more than 1,500 classrooms and 52 clinics were destroyed in Zambezia province, the most affected. In an audio recording of the address sent to the media, the Mozambican president said 250 security personnel were dispatched for rescue operations and nearly $4 million earmarked to support recovery efforts. He says for this, Mozambique will have a permanent post-cyclone reconstruction office. Secondly, says Nyusi, an assessment of the damage caused should be immediately carried out and followed by the mobilization of internal and external resources for the recovery or reconstruction of the affected districts in the province of Zambezia. Nyusi said the record cyclone had cut roads and power to some areas, and continuing rains were hampering search and rescue efforts in the six affected provinces. Freddy hit Mozambique for a second time Saturday, becoming one of the longest-lasting tropical cyclones ever recorded since first making landfall in February in Madagascar. The cyclone, which has since lowered in intensity to a tropical storm, dumped heavy rains across Mozambique and Malawi, causing severe flooding that swept away roads and bridges and buried houses under thick mud. Tens of thousands were left homeless and scores remain missing, meaning the death toll is certain to rise. Charles Manguiro for VOA News, Maputo, Mozambique.
This is Science in a Minute.
Jupiter's ice and water-covered moon, Europa, has long fascinated scientists because it may be one of the more likely places in our solar system that could have environments that are suitable for life outside of Earth. Significant scientific evidence, including data from NASA's probes, shows a giant swirling ocean of salty water or mushy ice lying beneath Europa's crust. It has also been found that its crust rotates at a different rate than its interior. A new computer model by NASA scientists is providing evidence that this subsurface ocean is pushing around Europa's possibly free-floating icy crust and is causing its rotation to speed up and slow down over time. The scientists are hoping that measurements by NASA's upcoming Europa Clipper mission to the Jovian moon will confirm and provide more details to their findings. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Encounter. This month marks the 20th anniversary of the U.S.-led invasion of Iraq. Two top-notch regional analysts, Ellen Lapson and Rhonda Sleem, reflect on the wisdom or folly of this military intervention, the occupation, and emergence of the Islamic State, as well as assess the current political and economic landscape in Iraq and the greater Middle East. Iraq, 20 years on, this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Women and girls have just as much right to access the digital world and prosper as their male counterparts, according to UN Women, who say they remain underrepresented across the creation, use, and regulation of technology as they commemorate International Women's Month. Our voices will examine how digital innovation and technology can be used to set women and girls on a path of success. Join the conversation Wednesday at 1900 UTC on the Voice of America.
This has been International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, thank you so much for listening. Visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours at voanews.com and check out voafrica.com for more English language programming. You can find International Edition on our current affairs programs, Encounter, Press Conference USA, and Issues in the News on voanews.com. Until next time, I'm Chinadofa in Washington. Have a great weekend.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
From November 1, 1955 to April 30, 1975, the United States and Vietnam were at war. During the 1960s and early 1970s, American forces used millions of liters of chemicals to destroy jungle cover used by enemy troops to hide their movements. One of the more commonly used defoliants was Agent Orange, a compound that included dioxin, a chemical that we've since learned causes adverse health and environmental consequences. Over the next 20 years, the acrimony between the two nations diminished, and in 1995, the United States and Vietnam established diplomatic relations. Today, in addition to cooperation in numerous fields across the board, the two countries work together to resolve some of the issues stemming from the war. One of these is environmental cleanup of the areas that were most heavily contaminated with Agent Orange. At the request of the government of Vietnam, the U.S. government, working through USAID, in partnership with the Department of Defense, collaborated with Vietnam to complete cleanup of the Da Nang Airport, which had high dioxin concentrations in the soil left over from the war. That project was finished in 2018. Next, the U.S. government and government of Vietnam continued cooperation on dioxin remediation at the Bien Hoa Air Base area, the largest remaining dioxin hotspot in Vietnam. An assessment of dioxin contamination there, completed in 2016, found that nearly 500,000 cubic meters of soil needed remediation. The project, which was launched in April 2019, is expected to take 10 years and cost around $450 million to complete. In early March this year, USAID Administrator Samantha Power, U.S. Ambassador to Vietnam Mark Napper, and Vietnam's Vice Minister of the Ministry of National Defense, Senior Lieutenant General Wong Son Chien, announced a new contract worth $73 million over 5 years to treat and clean soil at Bien Hoa Air Base. Under the contract, Nelson Environmental Remediation USA, an American company, will design and build a treatment facility to decontaminate soil and sediment on and around the Bien Hoa Air Base. The United States is committed to working with the government of Vietnam to address the legacies of war while continuing to strengthen the economic, cultural, and security ties between the two countries. USAID's efforts to clean up dioxin at Bien Hoa and Da Nang have been critical to building mutual trust and cooperation while deepening the U.S.-Vietnam comprehensive partnership.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.